Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Ask not.
The Beatles.
Bozo Circus on the air.
The president does it.
Sometimes you feel like a...
That means that it is not illegal.
Sometimes you
don't... Tear down this wall.
Here's Johnny.
Hey, Luke. May the force be with you.
It was you, Kristen, who shot J.R.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Oh, we're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
John has been waiting a long time to take the reins.
My name is Dave Letterman. Last night, I became a father. Thank you very much.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
For the third time in six seasons, it's one goal achieved. The Chicago Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup. The Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup.
It's in time. And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. The Cubs have done it.
And now, this is history.
You're going to need outstanding hosts.
With Dave Plyer.
It's a guy, but I love you.
And Dave Schwann on 720 WGN.
And live from the Skyline Studios and from the WGN Newsroom is our pal Dave Schwann. Dave, good evening to
Dave,
you.
Dave, happy March. We're
happy
getting
March.
Close to spring.
We are. Baseball's in the air, buddy.
It sure is.
Baseball is in
sure
the air.
Is. It's so good to see it on TV again.
It is. Oh, do you get marquee at your house?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Rough launch a couple
and I
weeks
get
ago.
And places where I hang out locally, too.
People want to talk about it. And they're just ready to jump on it. You know, they're just ready to jump on, oh, this is this, and it's bad, and it's I can't get it, and the quality's bad. Let me tell you something. They did throw a network together pretty quickly, but hats off to them for trying to figure this out and get
it
on the air.
Up and running, and there are going to be problems, bugs, that
as
time goes on, they work out.
As I said, it's going to just be tough not watching them on the old number nine.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Yep. It's just different vibe after all this time. I mean, for our lifetime.
Our lifetime. We grew up watching it, listening to it on WGN radio.
Yeah.
It's just a very, very different vibe.
Let's give them a chance, Dave.
And it'll all be,
by the time June comes around. I was going to say by June. Yeah, June or July. It'll be fine. All right, it's a little history this week. 1849, your favorite president, Abraham Lincoln, applies for a patent. So he's the only president to do that, to apply for a U.S. patent?
Right. He was the only one to do it because he was, you know, inclined to patent something that he came up with. I believe it had something to do with boating or something.
Yeah, it was buoying vessels over shoals.
Yeah. He was a riverboat pilot.
It sounds like the refrain to a song.
Yeah. And, you know, it was the shoals were in water along the Mississippi. And so it was in order to get that boat
over them.
Yeah. It was some sort of a device that was going to help.
So out of his realm to think about that and then say, well, this is such a great idea. And I'm going to patent this thing. I'm going to make some money off of this.
But look how practical he was.
I know, right?
Look how resourceful he was. That was all part of his innate leadership skills.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
1868, the U.S. Senate convened as a court to hear charges against President Andrew Johnson during impeachment proceedings.
Let's see. Where have we heard the word impeachment?
Did you report on this, Dave?
No.
The House of Representatives had already voted to impeach the president. The vote followed bitter opposition by the radical Republicans in Congress to Johnson's Reconstruction policies in the South. However, the effort to remove him failed, which they pretty much have every time we go through this process, by the Senate by just one vote.
One vote.
Yeah, one vote.
By far the closest.
Absolutely.
Of the three impeachment trials now that we have had, there was just one vote. You know, you think about this. That's only 3 years after the Civil War.
Yeah.
There's the, you know, what the country had been through, North and South, the devastation of a Civil War.
And the assassination.
And the assassination of Lincoln. And now you have a presidency that has just wreaked havoc in Washington.
Yeah.
And someone who really not everybody liked. And, you know, at the end, he served out his term and that was it.
But back then, it was one vote you could still get by.
Yeah, right.
One vote.
Yeah, keep
right?
in mind, we've never had a president convicted. Impeached,
that's true.
Yes.
That's
not
true.
Convicted.
That's true. 1862, the U.S. issues first paper money. It was $5, $10, $20, $50, $100, $500, and $1,000. So I guess the dollars were still coins and all that other
they
stuff.
They were coins,
so, yeah.
Yes. And yeah. There was a uniform currency.
Have you ever seen a $1,000 bill?
Once.
Really?
Once. I saw a $1,000.
Museum bill. Or where?
A man, a friend of ours, had one.
Whoa.
A family friend.
That's cool.
Had one. And
you go, here you go, kid.
No.
Nothing like that?
No. It's just, it said, here's a $1,000 bill. I don't know why he was carrying around $1,000 in
cash. Fancy pants.
And now we see more and more currency going away.
That's true.
I was in a place just the other day getting something to eat for breakfast, and they said I was ready to pay with cash because I'm old school.
Yeah.
They said, well, we aren't taking that right now. So, okay, well, here's the card.
I just had this discussion with our chief engineer, Bill Murdoch, and I said, hey, I want to go to this place down in the Pedway. Do you know how to get there? He says, yeah, it's over there. It's got really good food, but I won't go there on principle. They won't take my money.
How about that?
It's credit See? Only. So mm-hmm. that's how he feels about that.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to go hungry because, I mean, this is all going to change. This is all going to change soon. 1914, there was a poem written by a very amazing guy named Carl Sandburg called Chicago in March of 1914.
Yeah, now over 100 years old.
Right.
And I remember Carl Sandburg was still living when I was a boy. I remember him being eulogized
really?
On the news here in Chicago in 1967 when he passed away.
Is that what it was?
Away.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I've had the pleasure of visiting his birthplace in Galesburg, Illinois. Honored to have met and interviewed his daughter there.
Oh, that's cool.
A charming woman. And then several years ago when we were on a road trip down to the Carolinas, we visited the house where he died, Connemara.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's now run by the National Park Service.
I can't believe he's been gone over 50 years. I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
1914, huh?
Yeah. Yep.
Would you read this poem?
I would
poem?
Be honored.
So people
to
can
read
hear it?
Because
it's really one of the most impactful historical poems written about our city really ever. I mean, I guess if there's one, this would perfectly describe our city at that time.
Yeah, and in some ways, really kind of still does.
Carl Sandburg wrote Chicago, read by Dave Schwann.
Hog butcher for the world, tool maker, stacker of wheat, player with railroads and the nation's freight handler, stormy, husky, brawling, city of the big shoulders. They tell me you are wicked, and I believe them, for I've seen your painted women under the gas lamps luring the farm boys. And they tell me you are crooked, and I answer, yes, it is true, I have seen the gunmen kill and go free to kill again. And they tell me you are brutal, and my reply is, on the faces of women and children, I have seen the marks of wanton hunger. And having so answered, I turn once more to those who sneer at this, my city, and I give them back the sneer. And say to them, come and show me another city, with lifted heads singing so proud to be alive, and coarse, and strong, and cunning, flinging magnetic curses amid the toil of piling job on job. Here is a tall, bold slugger, set vivid against the little soft cities, fierce as a dog with tongue lapping for action, cunning as a savage pitted against the wilderness, bareheaded, shoveling, wrecking, planning, building, breaking, rebuilding, under the smoke, dust all over his mouth, laughing with white teeth under the terrible burden of destiny, laughing as a young man laughs, laughing even as an ignorant fighter laughs who has never lost a battle, bragging and laughing that under his wrist is the pulse and under his ribs the heart of the people, laughing. Laughing the stormy, husky, brawling laughter of youth, half naked, sweating, proud to be hog butcher, tool maker, stacker of wheat, player with railroads, and freight handler to the nation.
One take. Dave Schwann, everybody. Nice job. Nice job. Gave me the chills just listening to that.
Well, it's awesome. That's awesome. The imagery and the words are just awesome.
Fabulous job, Dave Schwann.
Thank you, Dave.
Fabulous job. Fabulous job. 1917. Desiderio Alberto Arnez de Echa III was born in March of 1917. Desi Arnaz.
Mm-hmm.
A pioneer in television. Like, when people hear the name Desi Arnaz, you know, they think of Ricky. People who really know him and know the depth of his career know that he really was an architect in the sitcom, in the television sitcom that we know today.
Yes, he was. He was the one that came up with the idea to film the I Love Lucy episodes because he had in mind future syndication. Look what happened there.
Yeah, they said, well, you know what? The way they were taping shows, so to speak, and airing them from coast to coast was by, there was all kinds of the Dumont electronic cam system, Kinescope.
Right.
Where they would literally film the live production on TV. They would film it on the TV and then ship it or transmit it.
Mm-hmm.
And the quality was terrible. Like if you watch, for example, the Honeymooners, the Lost episodes versus the original 39, the quality is very fuzzy.
Yep.
The audio is poor because that was done via Kinescope.
Right.
The first pilot that they did for I Love Lucy was done on Kinescope, on stage or whatever it was. And it was a pretty poor example. They said, you know what? But we want to own these. And they're like, well, who's going to, you know, you think about the infancy of television. Who wants to see these again after we play them? I'm sure they thought that way about old-time radio, the original radio shows is...
Oh, well, how many radio shows were just done live and not recorded?
Yeah.
Think of what we've
most
lost.
Of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, most of them, yeah. And when you think about, again, the common television, they said, well, we want to own them, and they hired, you know, these legends in the movie business to come and figure this out and reconfigure the stage and put an audience in there and light it properly. So in 1950, they established Desi Lu Studios, which you see that little signature still today in all the broadcasts, right?
I can still hear the music.
Yep.
Right.
And they both owned it together. They got divorced. So in 62, Desi sold all of his shares to Lucy, who then became the CEO. She was the soul of that. And then they sold it to Gulf and Western in 1967. But when you think about just, you know, they did the Untouchables, Andy Griffith, Dick Van Dyke was filmed at Desi Lu, but they, you know, Lucy, you know, and this company that her and her husband started, they greenlit Star Trek. You know, you think about Mission Impossible and now the movie series, that all came from Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz when you think about that, right? Desi has two stars in his honor along the Hollywood Walk of Fame. He wrote an autobiography called The Book back in 1976. He appeared on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson at that time.
I remember that.
And he hosted Saturday Night Live.
Now that I didn't know.
I think you can catch, I'm not sure if the whole one's on there. I think you can catch like highlights from that show.
Because they did it. How did I miss that?
Gilda Radner played Lucille Ball in an I Love Lucy sketch. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, think about the, you know, this is the first season of Saturday Night Live and Desi Arnaz hosts this show.
I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And Gilda Radner played Lucy.
Yeah. You can imagine the hair, the lips, the crying.
Everything.
Yeah. But you can catch the Carson one just got loaded. It was on Antenna TV. You can catch that on YouTube. And there's also a really great interview with Desi Arnaz on the David Letterman show.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a little listen to that appearance after he wrote his book on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
You know, the remarkable thing about you and your life is that you came from Cuba, became a musician and an actor, and ended up as one of the biggest producers of television shows here in Hollywood. At one time or another, you had many, many big stars working for Desi Lu.
Yeah, mainly I had Lucy.
Yeah.
That was quite a bit of help.
Yeah, but off of that.
You know, Time magazine asked me one time, if you had to split the percentage of the success of I Love Lucy between yourself and the actors and the actresses and the writers, how would you do it? Who would you give the credit to? I said, well, give Lucy 90% and split the rest between us.
Yeah, she's a big talent. Big talent.
No, I like her. No, Now, listen. There's another accident. You know, the whole thing. Because, like you said, originally, they did not want us to work together.
Right.
Lucy wanted me to do her radio show. It was called My Favorite Husband. And CBS wanted to adapt it to television. And she says, I'll do it if Desi plays the husband. Well, there was no way I could play that guy. He was the second vice president of a band played by Richard Denning, used to play. Blue American fellow with blue eyes and...
Didn't Joan Caulfield eventually do that show, My Favorite Husband?
Yeah, on television.
Yeah.
And I says, I can't play that fellow. Nobody will believe me, you know. So she said, well, let's try something else. So I says, look, they don't think we should work together. By that time, she was doing very well in pictures. She had done a picture with Bob. She did a lot of good pictures with Bob Paleface. I think she had done one already.
Fancy Pants.
Fancy Pants. Yeah, a lot of good
Sorrowful
pictures.
Jones.
Sorrowful Jones. Yeah, yeah. And she was doing, you know, she was co-starring with Bob, so that ain't nickels and dimes, you know. Bob faced more than Cougat, I know. here's what we did. I said, let's try it. Let's do a little, when the next time I go with a band on tour, you come with me. And we'll do a couple of numbers together. I had a very dear friend of mine, Pepito, the Spanish clown. You remember from the Hippodrome days. He gave her a couple of clown bits. Bob and Madeline, who wrote our show later on for all the years, wrote a little sketch. She did the clown bit. She did Cuban Pete with me, in which she sang, they call me Sally Sweet. I'm the queen of the Lancet Street. And pum, cuckoo, pum, and knock my hat off my head. And that was, and the audience, like these people here, throughout the country, they love us being together. So I said, well, now I don't care what the networks, the agency, or anybody says. If those folks there likes us, that's it. So then we started working on the pilot. And the pilot was 80% of what we done on the stage.
You ran for how many years on television? The reruns are going around now. You've got a whole new generation of kids.
25th year that it's been on since, it's never been off.
Pretty cool to hear that story.
Very
directly
cool.
From him.
Yeah.
Directly from him.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology.
So 1937, the first blood bank formed here in Chicago. The first true blood bank was organized at Chicago's Cook County Hospital. Blood banking began growing in earnest with the return of physicians who had seen the effectiveness of transfusion in the war. And they began to demand that blood be made available for treatment for their patients immediately. So 1937 was the first official blood bank here in Chicago.
Yeah, and to this day, Chicago's been a leader
in
blood banks and blood donations, good work in that regard.
Comedy legend Abbott and Costello launched the baseball routine, Who's on First? And they copyrighted the entire sketch in 1944.
I'm telling him.
You said none yet. Go ahead and tell me.
Who's on first? What's on second? I don't know. Is on third.
You know the guy's name's on the baseball team?
Yes.
Well, go ahead. Who's on first?
Yes.
I mean the guy's name.
Who?
The guy playing first.
Who?
The guy playing first base.
Who?
The guy on first base.
Who is on first?
What are you asking me for? I don't know.
Now, wait a minute. I'm
asking you who's on first.
That's his name.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
Who?
The guy on first.
That's it. That's his name.
Well, you ain't said nothing. I ain't asked you nothing.
You did.
You know the guy's name on first base?
Sure.
Well, tell me the guy's name on first base.
Who?
The guy playing first base.
Who is on first, Lou?
What are you asking me
now,
for?
Now, don't get excited. I'm saying who.
I'm asking you a simple question. Who's on first?
Yes.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
That's it.
That's who? I'm asking you, what's the guy's name on first base?
Oh, no. What's on second?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
One base at a time.
Don't mix up my...
I'm not mixing up anybody. Now, what's the guy's name on first base?
No, what is on second?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who is on first?
I don't know.
He's on third. We're not talking.
Wait a minute.
Whoa. Now, let's not...
Whoa. How did I get on third?
And that was Who's on First. It's kind of a crazy sketch. I mean, my kids can't follow it today and don't understand the humor in it.
Yeah.
But it's legendary. I mean,
sure.
You and I know what it is.
Yeah, right. And especially if you know Abbott and Costello from other routines on radio and certainly the movies.
The movies.
You get it.
You
yeah.
get it. Absolutely. 1956, the movie Rock Around the Clock with Bill Haley made its premiere in Washington, D.C. A lot of people don't know that was a movie.
It was a movie. I like that movie.
There was a... So I have my dad's original copy of the album.
Oh, okay. Oh, really?
Yeah. Which he still talks to me about today. You took that Bill Haley thing, didn't you?
So
yes, I have it. Dad, you don't have a record player anymore. I do have a record player. But it was, along with Alan Freed, the Platters, Tony Martinez and his band, Freddie Bell and his Bell Boys. It was produced by B-movie king Sam Katzman, who had produced several Elvis Presley films in the 1960s. The film was shot over a short period of time. I think it was actually in 1 month of January of 1956, because the song was so popular at the time, They just wanted to capitalize it and get it to the theaters.
And they did.
And what they re-recorded the song back in 1973, a different version of the song, only one, that they used for the first two seasons of Happy Days.
Oh, right, because they didn't have the Happy Days theme yet.
They didn't have it yet, and that first season, I think the first pilot, they played the 1950s version, and Bill Haley said, you know, we could do this better in stereo now for the show. Let's go back in studio and do it, and that's what they did.
So they actually did re-record it.
They did.
For the theme.
For
that's
the theme.
Not the original version.
No. And really, if you get it on DVD or you're watching the reruns of it, most of the Rock Around the Clocks have been replaced by the Happy Days theme because...
Just
of the music
better,
rights.
Perhaps.
No, the music rights.
And the music rights.
Music rights. Mm-hmm. A lot of that has been wiped out. Let's see here. 1959, Dorothy Comiskey Rigney sells 54% of the White Sox to Bill Veeck. So that's the beginning of another era, right? And the whole new era there.
He had no problem just sitting out in the stands, enjoying the game with everybody, just like a regular fan.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, that's
and
cool.
Also,
more relatable.
I also understand that, you know, when it comes to an open door policy in his office, there was no door. The door, he had no door
that's
in
awesome.
His office. So
I love that.
You know,
I love that.
If you had something to talk about, come on in. Yeah.
1960, the NFL's Chicago Cardinals moved to St. Louis. 1975, Elvis Presley began his final recording session at RCA's Hollywood Studios before that last banana and peanut butter sandwich. About that. That was so early in his life.
42, I think.
Yeah.
I think his last hit was Suspicious Minds.
Could have been. Yeah.
I think
something you're
like
right.
That.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
1981, and this is a momentous moment in television history. Walter Cronkite stepped down from the CBS Evening News almost 40 years ago. He announced that he intended to retire at that time. CBS had a policy of mandatory retirement by age 65, and although sometimes compared to a father figure or an uncle figure in an interview about his retirement, he described himself as being more like a comfortable old shoe to his audience. And his last day to anchor on the chair was March 6, 1981, and he was succeeded the following Monday by Dan Rather.
Dan Rather. I remember the day, Dave. And you, the build
I do
up,
too, believe it or not.
The build-up to this was unbelievable.
Yeah.
We didn't have the proliferation of cable and everything, so NBC and ABC ran ads in the major newspapers, major magazines, congratulating Walter, thanking him for his service.
That's terrific.
What he did, you know,
well, that's terrific.
Standards,
I did not know.
You know. I did not know that. I made it home to catch, the last 15, 20 minutes of the broadcast. And up until the final couple minutes, it was
a
business
newscast.
As usual.
Let's take a listen.
Yeah.
This is my last broadcast as the anchorman of the CBS Evening News. For me, it's a moment for which I long have planned, but which nevertheless comes with some sadness. For almost two decades, after all, we've been meeting like this in the evenings, and I'll miss that. But those who have made anything of this departure, I'm afraid, have made too much. This is but a transition, a passing of the baton. A great broadcaster and gentleman, Doug Edwards, preceded me in this job, and another, Dan Rather, will follow. And anyway, the person who sits here is but the most conspicuous member of a superb team of journalists, writers, reporters, editors, producers, and none of that will change. Furthermore, I'm not even going away. I'll be back from time to time with special news reports and documentaries, and beginning in June, every week with our science program, Universe. Old anchormen, you see, don't fade away. They just keep coming back for more. And that's the way it is. Friday, March 6th, 1981. I'll be away on assignment, and Dan Rather will be sitting in here for the next few years. Good night.
Pretty historic.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty historic.
Absolutely.
All right, Dave, have a great week, buddy.
You too, Dave.